Welcome to the Disruptance Podcast. The Disruptance Podcast is the show that disrupts the way entrepreneurs think to make them more profitable and impactful. Rethink tired and outdated business norms to welcome innovation and unlock your unlimited possibilities. Here are your hosts, Eric Forney and Greg Fowler.
Eric, we're here again, my friend, for another episode of Disruptance. And this one I know is going to be a controversial one, if you will, because we're going to lay it out. You're going to lay it on the line. No holds bar, as they say. I want Eric's thoughts as they are, my friend. This is going to be on the NAR settlement agreement. And anybody that's tuning into this as of right now, that settlement was announced, what, March 15th, 2024? Is that right?
The Ides of March. Yes, the Ides of March, Greg.
Okay. March Madness, as they might say.
Fine. Fine.
So, Eric, I mean, this is crazy. A lot of things that are going on right now, a lot of misinformation. I mean, just the same as you and I rant on different topics before, you Google this and there is just nonsense, ridiculousness all over the place. I think there's a lot of misinformation. It's getting passed along to consumer, to professional. I just want to clear the air. Yeah. So where do you want to start with the NAR settlement and everything that's going on?
Gosh, you know, you said I would be unfiltered. I'm not sure if I would be unfiltered because like YouTube might just, just entirely just block the video if I was entirely uncensored. But
I'd love it.
Let me start by giving a quick disclaimer so that the listener understands kind of my framework here, which is I'm not worried about this for me. Okay, so like I have no concern about this for Eric Forney, for my family, for, you know, my business. Okay, right. I'm not going to advocate for real estate agents because I'm going to advocate for myself. The reality is I think I would actually make more money under this new settlement agreement if I were still buying and selling real estate. I feel confident I would actually make more money doing this.
Wow.
However, I have a few real problems with it. And I'm hopeful that something will happen before July 1 that will prevent what amounts to be significant concerns that I have with this settlement agreement. I hope that something will happen prior to that, because the concerns I have are is that at the end of the day, the ones who won and benefited as a byproduct of this lawsuit, it's not the sellers who claim that they were injured. It's not the consumer who claimed that they were injured in this. It's not the real estate agent. It's not third-party companies. It's plaintiff attorneys. Mm. And listen, in America, they're fully able and capable of litigating whatever they choose to litigate. And if they come out ahead and they're able to win, they should be entitled to whatever the current system is. We don't always have to love the judicial system in America, but I would argue that it's the best one that we have. And it gets it right more often than it gets wrong. And in this particular instance, it just got it wrong. However, the losers in this scenario is the buyer. The consumer who doesn't own a home flat out lost, period. Because, you know, what amounts to be now is a significant challenge to purchase property for We have two classes in America, Greg. Mm-hmm. We have two classes. You know, people want to pretend that we have a middle class and a lower class and an upper class and an ultra wealthy, and they want to put labels on people. But there are two classes. There are people who own homes and people who do not. That's it. Okay. Because if you don't own a home, what we know is that your net worth and your financial security is significantly in jeopardy and much lower than those that do own homes. Mm-hmm. And the way that inflation and asset prices are going up, if you're not already a homeowner, it got much more difficult March 15th than it was on March the 14th. Because in this new settlement, one of the major things that impacts those that don't own homes or those that have low income or those that are disenfranchised and those that are military veterans is that they now are expected to pay out of their own pocket to have professional representation. And that's the crux of the issue here, is that most first-time buyers are already cash-strapped and cash-challenged for a down payment.
Sure.
And so when you add on top of a down payment, the cost of representation, what was already difficult became much more challenging. And that's not a positive for society. It's not a positive for home buyers. And so I'm hopeful that something will happen that will change the way that this settlement's been configured. But as of today, I have no hope for that, because 46 and all of his grand wisdom last week came out and claimed that, you know, he's calling on real estate agents to lower their commissions. And so he thinks that lowering real estate agent commissions will fix that problem. Here's the truth of it, Greg, is that let's just play math. And I know that that might be challenging for our president, but let's just do math for fun. Okay. So a $400,000 house at this magical fictitious price of 3% is what they would claim. Mm-hmm. If you go out and you buy a $400,000 house and you're going to buy it, and it has a $3,000 commission today, in the current system, the seller would be paying your representation, Greg. They'd pay your real estate agent $12,000, of which, you know, 30% on average is going to go to the broker. The broker gets really rich. How do I know? I own one. You know, you get super wealthy. Your profit margins average about 3%. Okay. Like 3% is roughly grocery store margins before grocery stores took advantage of COVID. So margins are terrible. They call it a broker because you're broker than the people who are out selling real estate. And trust me, that is absolutely fact.
There you go.
So it is not a get wealthy business to be a broker by any means, but you're going to split it with your brokerage. Mm-hmm. And the seller's going to pay you $12,000, pay your agent $12,000. Okay. Now, in the new agreement, the seller can't uniformly opt to pay your agent. So you have to make an upfront commitment that you will hire your own personal representation and you'll stand behind the guarantee of compensation, much like hiring attorneys. When I call an attorney says, here's how much it will cost you per hour. Here's how much I need for a retainer. In order to take your case, I need it up front. Mm-hmm. That's what the model that real estate agents will shift to. This is, again, why I say that I think I would do better in that model.
Sure.
Because I think I could demonstrate my value up front. However, in this new model is that, let's say that you get a discount. Let's say that somebody says, you know what, my expenses are lower. I'll help you out, Greg. I'll do it for $6,000.
Okay.
Well, you needed to put down 5% to purchase the home before. That's $20,000. Let's say you need about $5,000 in closing costs. That's about $25,000 that you are going to need to bring to buy a home today. And starting July 1, you would need the same $25,000 that you needed to buy a house. Plus, you're going to need $5,000 extra dollars to pay the professional to represent you in your best interest so that you're not defrauded out of buyer beware, the home that you're going to go purchase. Well, here's the problem is most buyers can't find an additional $5,000 in order to purchase the home. And so there's someone that goes, well, that's fine, Eric, because the seller will just cut them a deal. Okay, let's pretend. Wave this magic wand and play the math game again. Okay. So $400,000 house, the seller says, you know what, Greg, I'll help you out. I'll sell it to you for $390. I'll give you a better deal.
Okay.
$390. You're going to need to put 5% down. You're still going to have $5,000 worth of closing costs, roughly. You're going to have $5,000 to pay that agent. Okay. 5% of $390 is not much of a savings. So you're going to bring what, somewhere in the range of like $24,000, still going to cost you $4,000 more out of pocket than what it would cost you in the current system. And here's the thing is that if the seller gives you any deal better than $390 on that fictitious scenario, the seller was better off just to keep the agreement the way that it is today, where the seller's effectively netting $388. And you as a buyer are able to get into the house without having to come up with the additional cash out of pocket. The reason why the system is the way it is, amongst many reasons, and we can unpack them all over time here, but of the main reasons why it's this way is because we know that we live in a credit-based society. And so the credit-based society means that you likely, as a buyers, don't likely have enough cash on hand in order to pay their closing costs, their down payment, and all of their professional services, which is why they don't pay the loan officer commission. It gets baked into the rate, which is why oftentimes they get a number of services that are embedded into the cost of purchasing a home that now they're basically saying, hey, real estate agents, you'll have to be paid for outside of closing. Doesn't affect me. Mm-hmm. It does affect people who don't own a home. It does affect people who are low income or low cash on hand. And we as real estate agents and those that care about democracy have a choice. We either are pro housing or we're not. There's no in between. You're either for home ownership or you're not. And if you're not, fine. Get out, like go somewhere that's not pro property rights, but that's not a democracy. And right. So if we believe that home ownership and property rights are one of the key tenets of democracy, and we make it harder for people to own housing while making it easier for people who have money to buy assets, we will only further create class division. This scenario is easier for me, but I don't need it to be easier. You don't need it to be easier, Greg. Like, I believe that we should want, I want my son and your kids to have the ability to own a home. I want the veteran who comes home from Syria to have the access to having representation in order to build wealth and own the American dream that they were promised. And so when we deprive and rob people of that opportunity that other generations were given, I have a significant problem with that. We as an industry have a choice. We can either sit around and let it happen, or we can talk about it and we can try to be a part of the change.
But I mean, Eric, the way that you're portraying that thought process again, I mean, there's so many negative scenarios to the buyer, right? I mean, I think at the end of the day, that's what you're portraying there. So as the audience is tuning in right now and they're picking up what you're hearing loud and clear, and I'm sure they've heard mixed, you know, information throughout the internet, through their broker, through their team, anything that's on Instagram or TikTok that might be talking about this. How would you then kind of position their mind for this entire situation? And what would you say to them moving forward, you know, come July 1?
I mean, as a consumer or as an agent?
I would say as an agent. I mean, because let's be honest here, the majority of consumers aren't tuning in here.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the real estate professional that's diving deep into disruptance from that perspective.
You know, there's a couple of things to look at. This is that sellers, it's always been leads, listings, and leverage for as long as the MREA has been the new King James Bible of real estate. It's always been leads, listings, and leverage, and listings became even that much more leverage for real estate agents moving forward. So the name of the game is what it should have been previously, which was listings. And then, I hate to say this, but I'm a real estate agent. If I'm a real estate agent, I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to go position myself. I probably am going to position myself at without knowing how the consumer will react. I'm probably going to position myself at a higher price point where people have more cash and the ability to make an upfront commitment. I'm probably not going to.
Wow.
Don't hear me say I'm going to violate fair housing, Greg. I didn't say this. Okay. I'm just saying that if I'm a real estate agent, I'm likely going to be very intentional about who I work with based on their current cash and credit situation, which means I can't invest my time and my money. Most importantly, I can't invest my own money into subsets of population who can't afford the service like any other business owner wouldn't do. So that creates this problem of what I just said, which is fair housing. You know, A bunch of white boomers in D.C. got together and decided that they know how life works. Okay. And
boomers. And, you know, hey, remember, shout out to all you boomers out there.
Remember the last time these white boomers got together, they were the same jackasses who thought that the COVID policies made a lot of sense for propping up Wall Street while wrecking Main Street. And so so in their infinite wisdom, they've opted to think through the idea of what they would do while neglecting what happens for those that don't have the same level of wealth in the same scenario that they do. And so rather than get outside of their own way of thinking and get outside of computing spreadsheets and running scenarios online, they failed to take into account that there are people who immigrate to America who have the ability and the right to purchase a house, but have a limited network. Wow. And so as a result of that, by changing the way that the MLS distributes information, you take portions of population that have limited networks and you constrain them to potentially that same limited network when they were previously afforded a wide, transparent, freely distributed MLS across the country, no matter where they came from, no matter what their background, race, gender, nationality, or origin is, everyone had the same access and the same rights to housing.
Sure.
That will no longer be definitively the case based on July 1. We said it before, it will become the Facebook marketplace. Everyone will go out and decide to spread their disease across the Facebook marketplace where it's buyer beware. And that harms not only the population at large, but it certainly harms the disenfranchised and you know, low income veteran buyers who would like to access housing and build wealth. But without free and fair distribution, we'll have a hard time doing that. So let me tie a bow on it, which is if I'm an agent,
sure,
I have to be careful on who I'm working with while still being fiduciary, which means I would like to wake up every day and go help anyone who wants to own a home. That's why I got into the business.
Yeah.
I may not be able to financially do that moving forward as of July 1, because someone who's unable or unwilling to commit to paying the fees, the cost, the amount of real world cost that it costs me to run and operate a business, the person who's unable to do that, I may not be able to work with.
Eric, let me ask you this. You said unwilling and unable and unwilling. I want to talk about the unwilling side and your perspective on representation from the buyer. And correct me if I'm wrong, but as you kind of mentioned the different segments, I'd say it's two different buyers. There's a buyer that's a first-time buyer, and there's somebody who is existing in possession of a property. They're selling and then buying.
Yeah.
So are you finding that there's a potential for that seller who is selling their property to potentially use that same agent they're listing the property to help them buy a property, and they're potentially negotiating some percentage into that? Like, how does that work in that scenario versus a first-time buyer that maybe has the financial backing, i.e. they're just doing well financially, they wait a little longer, or they have, you know, parent money, right?
Yeah.
So what do those scenarios look like to you in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, you brought up an interesting one, which, what do you do when you're working with a seller who's going to become a buyer? You know, I'm glad that I'm not still selling, because when I was, I forgot. I thought everyone just liked me. I was like, oh, you know what? I advocate for real estate agents and for housing. So I'm like, you know, real estate agents have to love me, because how could they not? I advocate for their best interest.
Of course.
And then I helped Lauren do a real estate transaction the other day, and I was like, oh, I'm an asshole. I forgot. I am hard to deal with on transactions with other agents. And I say that because, you know, there's this one caveat that's included in here that may need a little bit of expanding upon from attorneys, but it says that that you can't make uniform, unilateral blanket offers of compensation to other agents. Okay. So how I read that, if I'm thinking through the framework of being a real estate agent, is that you, I'm going to list your house, Greg. We negotiate a compensation for the services. And then let's say you're willing to offer an incentive to somebody to bring a buyer with them.
Okay.
Well, because I'd said unilateral, uniform, and blanket, I now get to play judge, and I potentially have the ability to play judge and jury with what incentive I'm willing to offer to each and every individual agent. So I might decide that Betty, I like her. Let's give Betty the full amount. Let's give Sally, though. She's a real bitch. We're going to give her three peanuts when
nobody
she comes.
Nobody likes Sally.
Nobody likes Sally. So give her three peanuts and tell her to pound sand. Well, you know, there's a real problem. There's a real risk with that. And one, there's some risks with it around is like, one, did you intend for that to actually be the way that we allocated your incentive and your funds? Maybe.
As a seller. Yeah.
As a seller. Yep. Or the other risk is who's to say that it ends up being Joe and Sally, and that because I gave Joe a better compensation incentive than I gave Sally, who's to say that I didn't discriminate against Sally? And so there's a lot of risk involved in this. The way that I see it is, again, it's not as black and white as a spreadsheet and a pencil pushing nerd from John Hopkins thinks that it is. There are people involved in this, and there are extraneous, qualitative measures that go into effect here that we also have to abide by as real estate agents, who at the end of the day, our job is to legally represent our sellers and our buyers and in their best interest, while also following the federal laws that try to make housing as equal and equitable as possible, unlike what the country has done for much of its history. That part gets left behind. We've forgotten that, you know, the country had legalized redlining, and that a number of the laws and a number of the programs were structured to essentially exacerbate segregation. And I see how this is no different. And that's the frustrating part, is I see that this is no better than where we came from. And erases, 30 to 50 years worth of progress that we've made in unifying housing. Instead, it was five plaintiffs who will receive $5,400 for their quote damages to go erase 30 to 50 years worth of progress in segregated and fair housing. But if I'm an agent, I have to be aware that there are economic requirements that I must live by because I have bills to pay and I have real world costs.
Yep.
I'm probably only going to be able to work with somebody who's able to pay up front in some sort of retainer that would be applied towards a down payment. And if they're unable to provide a retainer, they're probably going to be without representation.
Have you heard of anything lending wise? Possibility? I mean, I know this is all still, fresh, but I'm just curious what you heard.
Yeah, there's definitely lending options available. the thing with it is that lending options are great, but it doesn't offset the fact that some buyers are still going to need the lending, the closing contributions, and to pay out of pocket for professional representation. So there are limitations on how much someone can receive in closing contributions. And this will make the for the people, again, who need more closing contributions and concessions, this is where it becomes questionable as to whether an agent can work with that individual. Again, not helping anyone.
It sounds like this is pretty crummy, I mean, to say the least, and the way that this whole thing is structured down.
Is it possible, though, Greg, that it's not crummy for real estate agents?
To your point earlier on, right? I mean,
yeah, but that wasn't what they set out to do, was make life better for me. They didn't make it better to set out for the best real estate agents. There are some who have argued that their intent was to separate the better real estate agents from those that are lower performing, lower producing, and you know, lower benefit to the consumer. Mm-hmm. And that's fine, except that it still harms the consumer in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, we didn't exactly need extra help. We had the ability to go out and differentiate ourselves in the marketplace without mm-hmm. harming the consumer. And this potentially is a significant benefit to high performing top tier agents
mm-hmm.
while being a detriment to low income buyers.
Do you find fallout industry wise? I mean,
no.
Okay.
No. So here, let's break this down, because I had this conversation with a lot of people recently, which is, let's just go through the numbers again. And I know that a lot of people aren't going to want to math here, especially 46, but, so when we look at the math, there's about 1.5 million real estate agents. Okay. Last year, my numbers are going to be off by like 10 to 20,000.
We'll let it slide today, Eric. Yeah, I mean,
thanks. I'm just going from memory. Okay. So, there's about 1.5 million real estate agents. Okay. Last year, at about 120,000 new licensees came into real estate, about 160,000 left.
Okay.
So there was a delta somewhere around 30,000, 40,000 real estate agents. So there was a net loss of about 40,000 realtors.
Sure.
Now, 1.5 million real estate agents. And last year, the early estimations are that 750,000 real estate agents sold zero houses. 750,000 sold zero. Okay. Now, remember, Greg, 40,000 got out of the business.
Mm-hmm.
750,000 mm-hmm. sold zero.
That's crazy.
You know, they say in a nuclear holocaust that you can't exterminate the cockroaches. And let the math be proof that that you cannot exterminate the cockroaches, because selling zero, we still saw 750,000 agents stay
crazy.
And remain licensed. And here's why. It's because there's no harm in retaining a real estate license and doing a transaction every now and then. Mm. No matter what happens with the settlement regulations or restrictions, the cockroaches who sold zero last year, if they sell zero again, it won't matter. Mm. They won't go out of business. They were out of business. They are out of business. They earned $0. They can't go down from there. And sure. So it fundamentally can't go lower than those who already did nothing. Mm. What it's likely to harm are those that are emerging, mm. Who could potentially become great real estate agents in the future, who are maybe, you know, like C players, B minus today. Mm-hmm. Those that are improving and are committed and actually really care about the consumer, they're the ones who are most likely to be harmed. Okay. The agent who is earning, you know, $60,000 to $80,000, whose lifestyle is $60,000 to $80,000, mm-hmm. if there's a pullback in earnings, that agent gets the most harm, because mm. eventually what happens is they just go get a job. There's no other option.
Okay.
If your lifestyle requires a $60,000 a year income, and the marketplace has changed, and you're earning $50,000 to $40,000 as a result, then that's where that person gets a job. So the full-time real estate agent who's earning the median income is the one most at risk. Because remember, despite what Joe might have told you, is last year the typical real estate agent earned $48,000. $48,000 was the earnings for last year's typical real estate agent. And so the full-time agents who are earning near that median wage are the most at risk. It's possible we'll see them have to go get a job, but we won't flush out the cockroaches. Mm-hmm. There's no exterminating them.
And that's a shame. When you mention that too, Eric, and I think it's eye-opening for anybody who doesn't know those numbers, you know, accurately. And despite you saying, you know, there's no harm, I would push back and say where the harm does lie is to the consumer. I mean, you think about it, there are one or two transactions. They're not serving me.
Yep.
As an average consumer,
Yeah,
that's ridiculous. And so mm-hmm. I think it's muddying the waters in a lot of instances. And to me, that's crazy. I'm curious, what did your buddy Joe Brandon say about the numbers? What did he say the average or median income for a licensed realtor is in the United States?
Well, in all of his infinite wisdom the other day, you know, he came out and said that he's calling on realtors to lower their commissions to save buyers on average $10,000 on the typical house.
Okay.
Now, I mean, you know, just such a generous individual, you know, in his $2.5 million beachfront property in Delaware. What a generous soul he is. And so, in all of his generosity, he's calling on agents to lower it by 10,000. Now, there's some listener that goes, "Man, I'm not very good at math, but I think Eric just said that the typical agent earns $48,000." And Joe Brandon said, "We're going to lower it by 10,000. That's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay, so the challenge with a lot of this becomes is there's a lot of confusion for the consumer. The good news is that I don't think that most consumers are paying attention.
Mm.
And the secondary good news is that we do have an election.
Okay. Okay. And good point too. I think that there's a hyper focus being industry standard is, of course, you're going to know everything that's going on into your world and what's happening around you. To say that there's a lawsuit or litigation to, I don't know, custodial workers, right?
Yeah.
Or there ends up being something along the lines of a major recall into, you know, different chicken manufacturers.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that if you're not in it, you're not necessarily eating, sleeping, and breathing it. And I think that it is important to be aware, but I guess I'm getting kind of overkilled by a lot of the real estate professionals that are out there kind of pushing this information, you know, direct to consumer. And I don't know how you feel about that, Eric. I mean, are you educating them or are you scaring them? Like what is going on with all that thought?
Yeah. Process? I mean, truthfully, that's a big challenge. I mean, as an industry, one of the biggest concerns I have is that you know, NAR is what I believe has been a great organization that is terrible at member communication. Arguably one of the best associations in the country for what they advocate for. For instance, Greg, they were just so happened to be in DC last week advocating for the extension of flood insurance for the 18th time in front of Congress in the past 4 years. They've been lobbying for the extension of flood insurance so that when a rainstorm shows up in where you live and your property floods, you're actually covered by federal flood insurance policies. So, you know, for the 18th time, Congress has kicked the can down the road on putting something formally into law. And so they've been at Capitol Hill lobbying for homeowner best interests. For instance, a couple of years ago in Minnesota, a woman in her 80s had her home repossessed $40,000. The state of Minnesota confiscated her home for a tax lien that was significantly less than her $40,000 house. And Minnesota said, "Thank you. You owe us money. We're taking your house."
Mm.
Now, thankfully, NAR and others went to the Supreme Court, the highest court in the land, and decided that, you know what, we're pretty confident that the founding fathers never intended for a state to steal your house in order to pay a back owed tax lien. And so thankfully, this older woman got her home back, including the equity. But that's because in 13 states, your house could be seized for back owed tax liens. Uh-huh. And so NAR and others fought for property rights throughout the country. NAR has fought recently for a carve out for the Department of Labor around how it's defined for independent contractors versus employees. Because in real estate, if every agent I know had to become an employee, it's highly likely their brokerage would go out of business and the real estate agent would also decide to leave the business. Mm-hmm. Or they'd go on their own and just start their own company and be a fully independent broker, because I don't know a single real estate agent who is employable or wants to be employed. And so just that minor event that took place just last Monday alone is where NAR spends its time lobbying and campaigning for home ownership, campaigning for real estate agents to facilitate access to home ownership. They're a terrible communicating organization. They very rarely communicate to their members about what initiatives they're doing. And so as a result, what we see is all this social media garbage that's put out by the members, because the members are unaware that who they pay $156 a year to. $156 a year goes to NAR. The members are unaware that their dues are actually being allocated towards really meaningful causes. And so you have all these agents on social media spreading their own version of reality. It's not necessarily helping the industry. It's certainly not helping the consumer. And what we should be doing is advocating for home ownership. We should be advocating for the consumer and spend less time doing dances on TikTok justifying your own net worth and why your fees or your compensation structure is valuable. Go out and advocate for people who don't have access to housing, who need it. Go advocate for flood insurance. Go advocate for home ownership and property rights. There are a lot of meaningful causes to get behind in the industry. One of them is not on social media arguing for why you're worth it.
Man, Eric, I mean, the way you said that, absolutely nailed it. And this a big issue that you and I both agree on is just the insanity that is media and what is actually put out there to the public in a mass sort of scenario and people are consuming. It's negative. You know, those two examples that you gave for advocacy for the consumer, for the industry, I don't know if most people even heard any of that. You know, the idea is, of course, they're going to harp on negativity and push that out there to the masses. And it drives me nuts. So I think to an earlier point is we always appreciate people tuning in to Disruptance because, you know, the way that we're going to really share information and as we always do, and especially the way Eric positions is just the honesty and integrity that way. You take it as it is. There's so many other outlets that you can get a bunch of garbage and a bunch of nonsense. And look, if you don't agree with it, that's fine. It's one of those things, but you have to be very cautious as to where you're getting your information from. I guess that's all I would say to that note. You know, but you bring up some really good points with that, Eric. So where do we go from here? I mean, where do you want to kind of portray the audience to the next steps and moving forward with this whole thing?
I just want to, one, remind people how we got here, you know, and so it was like 30 years ago, roughly, that this concept of buyer beware prevailed in real estate agents. Mm-hmm. You know, previously, buyers were without representation. They were vulnerable to being exploited or being at least at a disadvantage of disclosure and of honesty. And as a byproduct, funny enough, it was the industry and the federal government who said, you know what, we think that it would be in the best interest of consumers if they had representation. And so along comes what amounts to be a buyer's agent. Mm-hmm. And it was previously a listing agent who worked for the seller, and that was really the extent of it. Mm-hmm. The listing agent received the full amount of commission. The listing agent then decided, you know what, this takes a lot of work for me to work the buyer and the seller, but I owe all my legal fiduciary duties to the seller. I bet if I could just split my earnings with Greg, that I bet Greg would then help the buyer. That would give the buyer representation and someone who's looking out and advocating for their best interests. Plus, it would cut down on the amount of work that I have to do as a listing agent.
Sure.
That'd be a win for Greg. It'd be a win for the buyer. It'd be a win for me because I could help more people. It'd be a win for the seller because now all of a sudden we wouldn't have the high risk that the buyer is going to come sue us, because it just so happens that almost 8 in 10 real estate lawsuits happen when buyers lack representation. And so it would mitigate the legal risk of the seller as well. And so it was a win-win-win. And so this all took place, you know, 3 decades ago. And then, you know, in especially this thing heats up during the shortly after the George Floyd murder, where it we really got to focus on fair housing, which is what it should have been. And you know, we focused on fair housing, and the industry changed and put into a requirement called clear cooperation. And clear cooperation was where the intent was to minimize the risk that minorities and disenfranchised groups didn't have visibility to specific properties, or that they would continue to be at a disadvantage. And so what was required was that every real estate agent moving forward had to distribute their property online to every real estate company and have full transparency in the name of fair housing, in the name of providing access to everyone, no matter what they look like, no matter where they're from, no matter what they sound like, how they identify. It was providing equal opportunity and equal distribution. And so that took place, you know, just a few years ago. And so we got to this position because there were portions of the population that were underrepresented or misrepresented. Mm-hmm. It wasn't malice. It wasn't conspiracy. It wasn't collusion. It was because as a society, we continued to improve and iterate and allow society to get better over time, which is the large reason why there's almost no foreclosures at this point either, is because lending worked with agents, which worked with advocacy, which worked in Washington to get where we are. The problem with the housing market has nothing to do with the people who serve the housing market. Mm. The problem in today's housing market has everything to do with demographics and supply. That's it. There are more people who want to buy houses than houses available because we didn't build houses for 7-8 years after the global financial crisis. Mm-hmm. If we built more houses and we were able to allow interest rates and affordability to have a soft landing, mm-hmm. largely the constraints to the current housing market would solve themselves. They won't be solved by any courtroom, by any plaintiff attorney, by anyone in Washington until we solve a supply problem. It will only be made worse. I don't know the last time the government came in and said, you know what, we're going to make it better. And they did. I do not recall the last time that happened.
I don't know if anybody does, Eric, when you mentioned that. And you use the G word. So maybe this is a segue into a hot take. I really want to get your thoughts on this. If there is even a thought into this, who really benefits? I mean, you had mentioned, you know, different thought processes, but is there something that people really aren't talking about, Eric? I mean, is there someone or an entity that really benefits from what's happening here? And I don't want to throw the Z word in there.
No, I actually don't think they do benefit at all, actually.
Okay. Where's your head at? Where do you think?
If I went conspiracy on who benefits,
yes.
Which, by the way, I'm not currently on the side of conspiracy. I do like me a good conspiracy, but I don't have any good conspiracies about the origin of this. I actually think this was well-intended. I've read most all of the statements of interest by the DOJ and the FTC. And in my opinion, we got here because people did analysis on paper and through regressions and simulations. And what they didn't account for is that economics on paper doesn't always extrapolate to economics in reality. And I actually think it was well intended, but it's been, but it won't work the way that it shows up on a spreadsheet because there are other components that happen on Main Street that don't happen in K Street. And so the winners, so to speak, in this are hedge funds and wealthy. I mean, the plaintiff's attorneys won for sure.
Sure.
I mean, yeah. You know, I think they're staring at so far about $280 million roughly. It's kind of the early estimates as to what it may be. So I'd say they did okay.
Crazy.
You know, if a homeowner claims some component of class action lawsuit settlement, if they can make money, go for it. Knock yourself out. Like, you know, you should claim it, Greg, if you can make it. The money's available. It's just going to. You might as well put your name down to earn it if so. And then otherwise, I actually think it's possible that big brokerages benefit.
Okay.
So I think Keller Williams could be potentially in a decent position. You know, we have the largest We have the largest footprint in the country as far as total number of agents are concerned. The way that things are structured right now largely benefits larger players than it does smaller independents. But I don't think anyone disproportionately wins or benefits. There just are a lot of losers across the board.
Okay. Now, and I
for a system that wasn't broken, by the way.
Well, that's the craziest thing about it, you know, and the analysis based off of paper and the reality. It's a very interesting thing, and I think an analogy that most people can quantify is looking at it from what's that movie, Christmas Vacation. And okay. Remember when they remove the bonuses and he gets the jelly of the month club?
Yes.
And, you know, it looked good on paper, but at the end of the day, it hurt the people. And I think that's really, man, we don't want jelly of the month clubs. Just keep things the way that they were. Yeah. You know, it's a nuts thing, Eric, for sure.
You know, and here's the thing, too, Greg, is like there was relief for everything in the existing system. You know, I've hired great attorneys and I've hired really not great attorneys. Mm. And you know, when you find out you hired a not great attorney is when you get your ass kicked in a courtroom. And you know, when you find out that when you hire a not great real estate agent is when you get your ass kicked trying to buy or sell a house. And you don't find out until you've already made the decision and you've already committed and paid for it. There's no way to change that, period. Unless somehow I get to watch an audition tape of attorneys the way that, you know, professional scouts do with athletes.
Ooh, yeah.
Unless I get to watch courtroom tape to see what attorneys are great and what are not, I don't know who's going to be good or not. I do know that they'll at least have my best interest in mind, despite the fact that they might not be any good at what they do. Unfortunately, whether we want it to be this way or not, society is full of well-meaning people with low achievement and low ability, and nothing will change for that.
Right.
Your doctor might be the lowest in graduating class, and they may not be the most capable person to treat you when your life's on the line, and you won't know it until it's too late. All of the regulations and all the restrictions and all of the trying to make it different won't prevent that from being true. So the only thing the consumer can do is choose better. It's the only thing that they could do before. It's the only thing they can do after. But at the end of the day, agents won't work for free, which means if someone wants some support and some representation through the 185 individual processes and tasks that are required to purchase a house, if anyone wants to navigate those with the help of someone else so they can go on living their life, they'll have to hire whatever agent they deem to be best for their needs. And they won't find out until it's too late. I don't know of a better way to do it that exists today.
Well, I mean, that's food for thought, as they say, Eric. And again, the unique perspective and take on what's going on here. More to come. I mean, there's still, this hasn't gotten shaken out all the way, right? I mean, it's March 24th today. If anyone's curious as to when we're recording this, 2024. So the July 1, we're going to see, right, Eric? I mean, any thoughts or predictions to wrap it up and any closing remarks? I mean, this is a good one, man.
People will innovate. You know, absolutely. People within our industry will innovate. I feel very, very, very confident that real estate agents will come out with a benefit in some capacity. I think that real estate agents are entrepreneurs and renegades and innovators. And I know that that sounds silly to say for a lot of consumers, but the reality is that we chose the industry because we care about people and because we're unemployable. And in every other industry, they call those people entrepreneurs. And the world advances through the work of entrepreneurs. They go out and they have an idea and they opt to take action on it, betting for themselves against the odds. And real estate agents will do that again July 1st, July 2nd, the same way that they did last July. And we'll come up with ways that we'll continue to go help and serve people, while also creating income and opportunity for ourselves. I do very much worry about the consumer and do very much worry about what takes place with groups who are already struggling for home ownership. We cannot continue to have a two-class society. There is no great democracy that has a two-class society where the rich get richer and those that are not fall further behind. And thankfully, for whatever reason it is, Greg, life has worked out okay for me. And as a result of it, I'll be fine. But I don't feel entirely confident that without changes that everyone else who needs a hand up will be given the opportunity to have that, unless there are some changes that take place between now and early July, or at least until intelligent heads get in the room. We get the old white boomers out, and we get people who understand what takes place on Main Street, so we can come to a realistic resolution so that it can be made as accessible as possible, and we can get more people into houses.
Wow. Love it, man. This was another incredible one. I mean, I know that people need to hear this. They need to understand the perspective of it. Hopefully something resonated with you out there tuning into this as another episode of Disruptance. Eric, a pleasure as always, my friend. I'll catch you on the next one for sure.
Thanks, buddy.